I'm Sean Crawford. The focus this week is on the U.S. Senate for the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. Political science professor Chris Mooney took a closer look at the makeup of the Senate, which he calls the most unrepresentative elected political institution. I spoke with him about it. When you say unrepresentative, what do you mean by that?
It violates the principle of one person, one vote. That's a principle that I think most Americans understand sort of implicitly. It's a principle that the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld based on the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, equal protection under the law. For example, in this case, all legislative bodies must have, their districts must be of more or less equal size.
So while the House has to abide by these types of rules, the Senate gets the pass according to the U.S. Constitution.
Correct. The U.S. Senate is the only legislative body in this country that is allowed to have unequal sized districts. For example, the Illinois House of Representatives, every one of the 118 districts in the Illinois House of Representatives has approximately 108,000 people in it, or did at the time of the last census. That means that every district is the same size. Every U.S. congressional district is more or less the same size. And that's because the Supreme Court requires that because of that one person, one vote. But on the other hand, you look at the Senate and you've got, you know, the most extreme example is California on the one hand with, 150 billion people living in it or whatever. It's actually more like 40 million. And Wyoming on the other hand with, you know, sort of less than 500,000 people and a lot of cows and oil derricks, they each have two senators, right? So there's two senators from California with 40 million people. There's two senators from Wyoming with sort of 450,000 people. That is an incredible difference in representation. In the state of Illinois, Cook County has around 5 million people living in it, right? If you took all the people that live in Alaska, Vermont, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Delaware, and combined them, there would be fewer people than currently live in Cook County right now. But the key thing is that each one of those states has two U.S. senators. So those six states have 12 U.S. senators. 12% of the U.S. Senate is made up by six states that have a total of less population than Cook County. You could throw another Wyoming into that group, and you'd still have fewer people than living in Cook County. That's an egregious and extreme violation of the one person, one vote principle.
So what effect does this have when it comes to actual public policy?
What you look at here is what's the difference between the small states and the large states, because that's what we're talking about here. There's several very small states, you know, the smallest states, let's say the smallest 10 states, they typically make up about 3% of the U.S. population, though they have 20% of representation in the Senate. So, you know, smaller states have characteristics that are different than larger states. Right. For one thing, they tend to be more rural and less urban, right? So if you think about what are the policy interests of rural versus urban areas, well, rural areas want to build more highways. Urban areas want to have more money for mass transportation, right? They have different perspectives on social justice, different perspectives on criminal justice, different perspectives on agriculture policy, energy policy, virtually all across the board. There are different interests among, you know, those smallest ruralish states and the country as a whole. That's going to show up in policy interests, so that the state, because the Senate is biased towards the smaller states, then public policy that goes through the Senate is also going to be biased towards the interests of those smaller states.
And this has benefited the Republican Party primarily more than it has Democrats, correct?
Yes, that is true. It's not a perfect partisan split because the Democrats do control a few of the small states, Delaware, Rhode Island, Hawaii, Vermont to some extent. These are kind of Democratic strongholds, but by and large, the small states are firmly Republican, right? And again, if you think about the states, especially the big Western states that don't have a lot of people in them, you know, Alaska, Idaho, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, these are places with lots and lots of Republicans And a really an excellent place to see where this bias shows up in a partisan fashion is look at the current U.S. Senate that is right now trying the former president, right, is a 50-50 split, as we all know. It's perfectly evenly split in the Senate. So you would think that the parties would represent equal amounts of people because they get 50, you know, they've got a 50-50 split on representation, but that's not, that's even not even nearly true. There's, what is it? There's six states that have one Democratic and one Republican senator. So they're evenly matched on representation. So aside from those six, the other 44 states, half of them have two Republican senators and half of them, like Illinois, have two Democratic senators. The percentage of people living in those Democratic states is 57% versus 43% in the Republican states. So the, so in other words, the equal representation that the Republicans have in the Senate, they get with only 43% of the vote versus 57% of the vote for Democrats. That's, that is a clear bias.
I know the rule that each state has two senators is laid out in the Constitution. Take us back to why that was put there in the first place.
It was really a political deal that was done because in the Constitutional Convention in 1787, there was a concern among smaller states, so like the Rhode Islands, Connecticut's and so forth, that they would be dominated by the large states, especially Virginia, which was the largest state in those days, because they, the large states, a lot of people in them, and they thought if it was everything was majority rule, like the U.S. in, you know, in Congress, then the large states would dominate the small states. And, you know, on a one person, one vote principle, that's as it should be, right? Why should, you know, Rhode Island's small population be able to, you know, tell Virginia's larger population what to do? That makes sense. The reason, however, that they gave the state special status in this sense was, number one, to get the Constitution passed. It was a political deal. They had to get the small states on board somehow, and this was the way they did it. They said, okay, look, we'll do population in the House, and we'll do states in the Senate. And that sort of was a balance that allowed them to do that. The other thing, that the reason why this made some sense in those days is that 1787 was not long after these states had been independent colonies. They didn't have anything to do with one another. South Carolina had nothing to do with Massachusetts sort of in 1760. I mean, they were all related to the British crown, but they didn't have anything to do with each other. So they were, in some sense, sovereign. They were like little bitty countries, in a sense, when they broke off from England. And so what the Constitution was all about was about getting all of those little sovereign entities together into one group and working as a group together. And even basically giving up their sovereignty in order to have sovereignty for the whole country. You know, which is a great idea and brings us to where we are today, the United States of America. But we still have this legacy of this kind of anachronistic thinking that states are somehow, unique or independent. They're not just areas of land, which under every other aspect of our government, they are.
Anything can change. The Constitution can be changed. But is that likely? And if not, what does it mean, do you think, going forward? Will this issue only get exacerbated?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, certainly this is an institutional arrangement. People set it up and people could change it. But it does seem, I mean, the process to change a U.S. Constitution is very onerous, takes super majorities in a couple of different arenas, which is going to give the small states that are benefited by this bias, they're going to have excessive veto power over. So I doubt this is ever going to happen unless things get to an even more extreme situation than they are now. But if we don't change this, what's going to happen is that the demographic trends of the country are going to continue and to diverge the small states from the rest of the country. The small states are going to get smaller relative to the rest of the country. They're right now much whiter than the rest of the country. That's going to get worse. We see the trend already that the difference in the small states have fewer minorities and immigrants than always in the last 40 years. You see a trend line, but it's getting worse in the last 20 years where the smaller states are actually getting whiter than they were, and while the rest of the country is diversifying in a fairly steady pace.
Chris Mooney is a professor of political science at the University of Illinois at Chicago and with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs.